Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Justin, I'm going to give you one more chance. I need you to just loudly call this guy an idiot for that question, my man.
All right, you're an idiot.
Justin Reed, part four of the Texans position series. Landry Locker, Wade Smith, and for John Lopez, Figgy Fig, holding it down. You look at the safety position for the Texans. We've already talked about the corners. Tomorrow we're going to get into the running backs and linebackers. The running backs at 11, my gosh.
You're going to be glad that Lopez ain't here because, you know, he's going to get the running backs the business. At least David Johnson.
Yeah, he's not high.
He's not a big fan.
He's not high on him. It's not funny to John when it comes to David Johnson. But we look at the safeties for the Houston Texans. It's a strange position, to say the very least, heading into 2020, because you feel amazing about Justin Reed, especially what he did last year. Justin Reed heading into year three, I mean, you feel amazing. And the two biggest plays the Texans had last year on defense, arguably, he made both of them. You had the Tennessee game where the Titans were on the verge of taking a 7-0 lead. He knocks the ball out of the receiver's hands into Whitney Merciless' hands. Whitney returns it to the red zone. Kenny Stills scores, and the Texans end up taking control of the AFC South. And, of course, first win of the year, Jacksonville, Minshew Mania, under a minute remaining, looking to take the lead with a two-point conversion, and the D stiffened because of Justin Reed.
Jacksonville going for the lead right here from the two-yard line. Minshew with the gun, three receivers left. Handoff Fournette, running left. And he stopped. Justin Reed got in there. The D stiffens.
You feel good about him. I mean, and you also learn that he had a torn labrum last year, which makes it even more impressive. You feel good about that. Then you paid a guy $6 million that's a safety. Feels like we should be talking about this position and feel great. But there's only one guy I really feel about. There's really only one guy I know about, Smitty.
Yeah, man, listen, Justin Reed, he was still in the draft. The fact that you got him in the third round where you got him, he shouldn't have been there. But because of that, now you have a guy that is a late first round, a high second round caliber talent. Getting him in the third round is a steal for the Texans, and he's played that way since he's been here. Last season, like you mentioned, he was playing injured, but he still played at a very, very high level. You're very excited about what you're going to get out of Justin Reed this season and going forward, what he brings to the table as a leader, what he brings to the table as a playmaker, what he brings to the table just overall as somebody that's going to help propel the defense and help it get back on track. He's one of those guys that you can count on for the Houston Texans. But after that, at the safety spot, you got a lot of unknowns.
Justin Reed's also very positive. He brightens everyone's day up there. We've had him on a couple times. He's a loophole, and he's a positive guy. But I'm going to give him a tough task. I'm going to ask Justin Reed, the one safety that you and I both feel good about for the 2020 Houston Texans, I'm going to ask him to sell me on these other safeties. Doesn't look like there's very much behind you, Justin. So as Landry Locker and Wade Smith, as we continue part four of the Texans position series and we talk about the safety room, you're a positive guy. Sell me on these other guys, specifically this Eric Murray character who the Texans gave $6 million to this year and next year. Sell me on it, please, Justin, please.
Definitely an athletic player, good guy, not going to have any off-the-field problems. I actually trained with him 2 years ago in Arizona for a couple of days, so I met him briefly over there, and we've been trying to catch up more throughout these Zoom meetings. It's not really the same as being able to hang out with him in real life, but him, Michael Thomas, who we also recently brought in, who's the hometown kid as well, We're putting in a bunch of new defensive schemes that they have a lot of familiarity with. So I know they're going to be excited for the opportunity to come in and perform.
Are you sold? I didn't hear much that...
I'm not sold at all, Andrew. I'm not sold at all. And you know that if it was up to Justin Reed, his brother Eric would be starting opposite of him for the Houston Texans. And he's still available. He's still out there on the street. So that's still a possibility that could happen. When he mentioned Eric Murray, not the first thing that came out of his mouth. I think he said he was athletic. But the second thing that came out of his mouth is that he was a good guy. He's not going to get in any trouble.
That's what you tell someone before you break up with them.
Listen, I don't want anybody to describe my career as he was a good guy and he didn't get in any trouble. If you describe my career like that or describe my abilities like that, you're basically saying I'm just a guy and he's not going to detract from the team and what in our culture here. But can you play? Can you go out there and perform at a high level? I don't think Justin Reed knows. Just like we don't know.
Anyone knows.
Nobody knows. He's started 15 games, and this is what, his fourth season? That's not a lot of games.
This is his
fifth season. Sorry. That's worse.
Yeah.
You're starting three games
a year.
Four games
last year as a true safety. Before that, he was kind of a corner.
Yeah, that is he's a big unknown. But you can look at it from the positive side of maybe this guy's going to get put in the right system to where he can flourish and blossom. You know, by the time I got here to the Houston Texans, I only started, I don't know, like 30-some games in my career. I got here and started 60-some games.
$6 million a year?
Not close. Not quite, but close.
I mean.
Not quite. I mean, by inflation-wise, I got $6 million a year. Yeah, for sure.
I'm just talking about proportionally to what he got. I mean. Can I interest you in two stats?
For sure. What you got?
Justin Reed has 27 starts in two NFL seasons.
Yes.
27 starts in two NFL seasons. All of the other safeties on the Texans roster, all of them, have 48 starts in 18 seasons.
Numbers are hot.
In 16 more combined years, all of the rest of the safeties on the Texans roster have 21 more starts than Justin Reed. But wait, there's more. To quote the late Billy Mays, could I interest you in a stat, Wade?
Of course you can, Landry.
In his two NFL seasons, Justin Reed has 5 interceptions.
Okay.
The rest of the safeties on the roster in 18 combined years have 4 career interceptions. Justin Reed has one more interception than every other safety on the roster combined in 16 less years. It's a driver's license. They have a driver's license more of experience and one less interception than Justin Reed, Smitty.
Those are not numbers that make you confident. Those numbers are not hot. I'm sorry, Bridget, even though that's a great drop. Those numbers are not. That is not what you want with your safety position coming into this season for the Houston Texans. I will say this.
Uh-oh.
The fact of the matter is...
Yeah, head pat right here.
...is that we don't know what we don't know.
Okay.
That's the best I can give. We don't know what we don't know.
I would say that.
We don't know what we don't know.
I would say that.
You haven't seen... Have we seen Eric Murray play bad?
He's been in the league 4 years.
I haven't seen him play, so I don't know if he's played bad or played good.
Okay.
He hasn't been a starter.
Okay.
He's got to get on the field and show it.
Okay. Michael Thomas has been in the league 7 years.
He's a big time special teams player.
He's all decade team special teams.
No question.
That's great.
Like, that's awesome.
All decade team.
Yes.
And he does have 25 career starts in 7 years, 3 career interceptions.
Yes.
So you got
I'm more confident in Michael Thomas being the starting safety than I am in Eric Murray.
He's a good special teamer. Jalen Watkins, good special teamer. 8 starts in his career, but he has played 30% of the snaps in 2 of the last 3 years. So there is that.
Yeah.
A.J. Moore. He's been on the Texans for 2 years. Ooh. He's played every game.
He's a core special teamer. Come on now, Figgy.
He's played 20 snaps at safety in the last 2 years, but he's good at special teams. So you have Watkins, Thomas, and A.J. Moore, and even Eric Murray that are good special teams players, but we don't know if any of these guys can play safety, and they have one less interception combined than Justin Reed in their 18 years of experience compared to Reed's 2.
Landry, as you're going through these names, you know who I start missing? You know who I start reminiscing on?
Kareem Jackson.
Kareem K-Jack Jackson. Like, I really feel like if he was on this roster, we would be,
it'd be balling.
Approaching this safety position in a completely, entirely different manner.
I'll say this, and I'm being dead serious. I'm being dead serious. Kareem Jackson is the good version of versatility.
Yeah.
The sorry offensive linemen 2 years ago that were versatile that weren't good at their own position. That's the versatility that irks me.
You have to have versatility.
We did the cornerback position series yesterday.
Yeah.
And I think Kareem's more of a safety right now. He might have been the second best corner on the Texans.
There's no might there.
There we go.
Kajak would be the number two corner on this team if he was still here.
Okay.
And he'd be the starting safety on this team if he was still here.
Him and Justin Reed by each other, especially with how he balled out last year.
Yeah, you'd look at the defensive backfield in a completely different manner if he was still here. But he's not here. He's gone. Yeah. When you look at these players that are here, most of them are young. Most of them are special teams guys. And the stats that you gave out about Justin Reed compared to the rest of the group, those wouldn't be as bad if the Texans had drafted another young guy that was a rookie coming in that you had excitement about. Then you'd be like, all right, you know, we got a young guy that's you're to be excited about. But right now, you got a bunch of guys that are just unknowns or guys that are better in other roles on your roster. Michael Thomas is an excellent special teams player. He's not going to be an excellent safety. That's not his role. Everybody has their role in the team. Eric Murray, you don't know what you're going to get.
And I'm intrigued by Watkins. I'm intrigued.
Really? I mean,
what else do I have?
Here? I don't know.
I can't get intrigued
about something I don't know. It's just like
I'm comparing him to what we got.
When we go to training camp, right? There's undrafted guys that show. I'm talking about while I was playing in the league. You go to training camp and there's a bunch of new faces, and you want to see which new face stands out. But until that new face stands out, they're just faces in the crowd. You don't give a damn what the hell they got going on. You focusing on the guys that you know are going to be there and improving what you got going on. They got to go out there and do some stuff for me to get excited about it.
The thing is, it'd be one thing if they just didn't address the safety. You gave Eric Murray the money you gave him. And I'm still just as confused as I would have been had you brought in a guy off the street. We'll see what happens. That's the Texans position series. Do you have any analysis on Jonathan Owens?
I don't know who that is.
Who? And Shalom Luani. Hold me to that pronunciation.
I put that on me. I didn't deep dive. I didn't get my John Harris on. Next time I'll be better.
All right, there we go.
That's working a jug machine
of the Texans position series. Justin Reed, really the only thing you feel great about.
Yes,
Eric
sir.
Murray, we know he's getting paid like a starting safety. Don't know if he can be a productive starting safety. And then you got a bunch of good special teamers. Tomorrow we're going to do the running backs at 11, and then we're going to do the linebackers at noon. Is Zach Cunningham the best player on this defense? We'll cuss and discuss that. Landry Locker and Wade Smith. A member of Deshaun Watson's camp had some interesting things to say about DeAndre Hopkins no longer being here. Could it actually make Deshaun a better quarterback? I can't believe I'm even saying this, but don't kill the messenger. Next.
What? Bro, what are you talking about, man?
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Landry Locker, Wade Smith, in for John Lopez on In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Quincy Avery, quarterback coach of Deshaun Watson, had some interesting things to say when he joined Ryan Russillo. We want Deshaun to take the next step, obviously. It benefits the city. It benefits the Texans. Everybody's happy when the Texans are playing good. And to be honest, we've been starving for a quarterback since before the Texans acquired Deshaun. We know what he needs to improve. Bill O'Brien has said it. Quincy Avery works with him on a daily basis. Here's what he said Deshaun needs to work on when he joined Ryan Russillo in the Ringer.
The thing that I think Deshaun's going to do to take his game to the next level is just be more consistent in a lot of the little plays. Like you'll see some of the misses, but a lot of times what happened was he would get there late or wasn't probably as prepared as he could have been in terms of making the decision.
That's true. I mean, Wade, you agree with that completely. I know you're kind of an offensive line apologist. Just kidding. But what do you think about what he had to say about Deshaun's decision-making, getting rid of the rock quicker?
Yeah, I think that's a natural thing when you look at a young quarterback in this league. They're gonna struggle getting through their progressions and making quick decisions. That's part of them maturing as quarterbacks in this league. So him struggling with that at a young age is to be expected, but he's going to have to continue to mature and improve on that part of his game if the offense is going to take that next step. And so that's kind of what Quincy is talking about there. And you talk about me being an offensive line apologist, but as somebody that played the position, when your quarterback doesn't get the ball out on time, that causes issues and it causes problems that don't need to be there for you personally and just for the offense in general. Now, the thing about Deshaun that's so great is that because he can make such spectacular plays and get you out of a situation, an offensive lineman is not going to ever be mad at Deshaun because you could get beat off the snap of the ball and Deshaun will make that guy miss and throw a 40-yard touchdown pass and you look like you did your job because, hey, he got the ball off and he scored a touchdown. It's an excellent play. But those times that he does hold the ball, it hurts the team. But the offensive lineman going to always have his back because he does the spectacular plays as well.
That we can agree on. We can agree on what Deshaun needs to work on. Mm-hmm. We can agree on the what. But there's a lot of W's in this world. We know about the what. We know about the who.
Mm-hmm.
The who is Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
The what is holding the ball too long. What about the why?
Uh-oh.
Why is this happening? Why is Deshaun Watson holding the rock? Sit down, Smitty. I don't want you to lose it.
I'm gonna stand up now. I'm stand up.
And people, keep your hands on the wheel. I don't want any of the loopholes to be driving off the road when they hear this. We got most of the W's. What about the why? Why is Deshaun holding the rock too long? Here's Quincy Avery on the Ringer.
But it's really hard when you have a guy like Hopkins. Like, you want to stay on that a lot longer than you should, and then you end up late for everything else. So losing one of the best receivers is also going to add a unique dynamic in terms of him being able to just go through his progressions and just being more disciplined in those sort of things.
Come on, man. Come on, now.
Your reaction to that. Yeah, I've heard people say this. It's his quarterback coach saying it. Your reaction to it.
It just sounds like an excuse, man. And I would love to have a conversation with Quincy to kind of see maybe there was some more context there that we missed out on. In that clip, I would just say this, man. If you're the starting quarterback of the franchise, you're going to do whatever it takes to win the ball game. And when Deshaun Watson is getting locked on DeAndre Hopkins, 9 times out of 10, it's because Will Fuller's not in the game because he's hurt. Kenny Stills is out. Your 2 and 3 receivers are guys like Kiki QT or DeAndre Carter or Vincent Smith. Otherwise, I don't think this line of thinking makes any sense at all. If he's holding on looking at a guy that he trusts too much or he trusts ultimately, that's because he feels like that guy is going to give him the best chance to win. You got to throw the ball to the guy that you can count on making the play. Other guys around have to step up, but damn, hearing that just sounds like an excuse, man.
It's either an excuse or you're trying to have optimism. I mean, there's been a lot of quarterbacks over time who have had DeAndre Hopkins type receivers that don't hold on to the pill too long. So maybe you're trying to make light out of a situation. Maybe you're trying to be somewhat apologetic for a guy that you spend a lot of time with. I've heard this said. I'm not even saying, I mean, you watch tape and you say you don't necessarily see him cueing in on Hopkins. I'm not saying that that's not happening because it could be. But my thing is, if that is happening, that's Deshaun's fault. That's Deshaun Watson's fault. That's not we got rid of DeAndre Hopkins, so now it's going to be easier. That's a problem. Because what happens if Will Fuller becomes as good as Nuke was? Like, and it's a huge what if. I'm just bear with me. What if someone fills DeAndre Hopkins' shoes to where all of a sudden Deshaun has that rapport with them that he had with Nuke? Is it all of a sudden going to reemerge as a problem? No. Deshaun's going to have to stop doing that if that was the issue. I think in a perfect world, the Texans would love to have another DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
Like, they would absolutely love that. So if that is an issue, then it's something that Deshaun's going to have to work on. It's not just gone because DeAndre Hopkins is gone, unless they just need to not have one of the best receivers in the league moving forward. It doesn't make sense. That's a Deshaun thing. That's not a Nuke thing. And I don't even know if it's true, to be honest with you.
Yeah, when I look at it like this, I say, man, listen, Deshaun Watson, when he's back there quarterback and there's a couple of times that he's trusting the system and his receivers, his other guys might not be where they're supposed to be or their timing's a little off, after a while, he's going to not necessarily buy in anymore. He's going to be like, you know what can I do to be effective on this particular play so that we can win a ball game? And so he might lock into a guy like DeAndre Hopkins. To me, it's more of an indictment on his trust and belief in the system and trust and belief in the other guys that are going to be running routes in it for him to just fully buy in and do it the way that Bill O'Brien and the coordinators over there, Tim Kelly and those guys, want him to do so that he can bring out the best of the offense, bring out that Tom Brady offense. That's what it's going to take. And so the new pieces that they have, I think that's going to help them with that because there's more veteran guys out there. There's guys that you could probably have more trust in. But that all depends on if these veteran guys stay healthy. The issue last year with the Houston Texans was when they weren't healthy, these issues we're discussing right now would come up. But when those guys were at full strength, you didn't really have issues with Deshaun is holding the ball too long. The offense isn't moving. That wasn't the case. When Will Fuller was there, when Hop was there, when they were at full strength, they were able to move the ball on anybody. There were times I remember coming in here after games saying, like, listen, you can't stop the Texans. They got Will Fuller. They got DeAndre Hopkins. They got Fails was scoring touchdowns all over the place at the time. You had Carlos Hyde toting the note. You had all these offensive options that were going to work and doing great jobs. And it made it seem like the offense was invincible. But as soon as one of those critical guys went out with the injury, when Stills wasn't there or when Will Fuller wasn't there, all of a sudden the offense looked stagnant. The offense looked like it wasn't on par with any of the better offenses in the league. And so I think that's where these issues come into play.
Maybe they're just hurt and they're trying to look at the light at the end of the tunnel and look at the bright side, because Quincy Avery was also asked about what it was like being with Deshaun Watson when the news broke about DeAndre Hopkins being traded. And maybe just like us, he's still mourning the loss of Nuke and he's trying to look on the bright side of things.
It was super awkward and I probably was out of line when it first happened. Like, we're in the gym together. It pops up on my phone. So I'm like, yo, look at this. He's like, what? Like, slaps it. Like, he's the level of frustration that you have when something like that happens. And it's very, very difficult to deal with that. And I'm just like a big brother in that instance. It's like, this is what happened. All right, it is what it is. Now, all we can think about is how do we move forward and how do you make the best situation possible? And how do you get on the phone with your coaches so that you understand what they're doing to move forward so that they have a plan? And I think that they've made him really comfortable with the plan that they have. And now it's like, what do we do? Keep pushing forward.
Maybe that was part of the pitch, is the coaches telling him, hey, I know you're disappointed, but you're going to spread the rock out because Nuke's no longer here. We'll see. I just find I have a hard time believing that if that was happening, that Nuke's the guy to blame for that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man, you know that they had to smooth that over with Deshaun Watson. They know he's the franchise guy. They didn't consult him before they made the move, because you could see by that reaction right there, he was surprised, just like we all were surprised. And I think they had to, and they apparently did a really good job of selling him and getting him to buy in. And at the end of the day, that's the most significant thing. We can all debate what's the best way to go about getting something done. There's always more than one way you can skin a cat. But if your guys on the team believe in what the person at the top is selling and they buy in, you can make this system work. You just got to get the guys to buy in. You got to get all the players that are involved in it to be masters at their crafts mentally and physically and stay healthy, and you can be successful. But that's what it's going to take for the Texans. And it's more difficult to do it that way. But when you get it done, we've seen it being extremely successful in this league. They got to get guys to buy in order to make it happen. And the first guy to get to buy in is Deshaun Watson.
Why are you trying to skin cats is my question.
It's just a phrase, Landry. I don't know. It's just a phrase. I've heard it seem like my entire life. There's more than one way to skin a cat. I don't know where it started from. I don't know where.
What are the ways?
I mean, you could use a razor. You can use clippers.
Now you can move on.
There's a lot of things that you could do. I don't know, Landry.
We can move on. Wade Smith, Landry Locker here. No Nuke Hopkins. Does it mean a better Deshaun Watson? That seems to be the pitch going on around town. Some insightful and frustrating stuff from the most hated man in Houston. Did Alex Bregman break rules during the offseason? He may have. Plus, Well-Spoken Wednesday with Stanford Route next.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Well Spoken Wednesday, Stanford Route going to join us in a sec. Wade Smith in for John Lopez. It is In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. The most hated man in Houston with some frustrating yet very insightful, I think, stuff about Major League Baseball and the Astros as baseball season approaches, about 16 days away, 2 weeks and change till the Astros will be back on the field. Let's start with Trevor Bauer, who was on Pardon My Take, talking about trolling the Astros and why he thinks it's actually necessary. And I think this is something even Astros fans can get behind and support Houston's most hated.
At this point, look, I mean, it is what it is. It happened. Everyone's aware. It's part of the culture now. And it's like, you know, making memes is like, it's like crying Jordan at this point. Like, you make an Astros meme every now and then. It's funny. If you make them too often, it gets old. You got to space them out a little bit. I mean, with how ridiculous 2020 has been, there's so much serious, heavy stuff going on in the country. Like, making some fun of some things is much needed, I think, for everybody.
Can't disagree.
I mean, you can't disagree with that. I mean, Tyler does a good job of putting his sports hate towards the Houston Astros because they were the recipient of a little help that a bunch of teams were recipient of, but I guess the Astros were able to win, and because you win, they're going to use that against you. And now he's got his jokes, and his jokes were fine, cool, Tyler. But at the end of the day, if he had his choice, if it was up to him, he would be a Houston Astro his damn self. He loves everything about the way the Astros go about their analytical department, the way that they can get the spin rate up on players, how pitchers come to the organization and they're pretty good to average and they become damn good to great while they're here. And so he would want to be part of that. So he's putting all these T-shirts on and these hats, but if his agent said, hey, the Astros want you, he'd come running.
Yeah, and I wouldn't mind it either myself, having Trevor Bauer on the roster. I thought it was a possibility a while ago. I think this is some insight. And I think this needs to be mentioned when we talk about Trevor Bauer, one of the most hated men in Houston here in anticipation of the Astros beginning the season. He's a smart dude, man. Like, this guy is a very, very smart guy. And I think in an offseason in which players have said some foolish things in baseball, and the commissioner's one of the biggest idiots I've ever seen and ever covered in my entire career. He provided us with some really good insight of these negotiations and what went into those. Here is some insight, because I know you always like the player's perspective. This is Trevor Bauer. Keep in mind, this is a player talking about why he doesn't have any ill will towards the owners with how this whole thing went. And he can actually see both sides of things.
Look, it's hard to blame either side, and it's very easy to blame both sides. Like, you can look at it a couple different ways. On the owner's side, you'd look at it like, if anyone was running a business, they would want to find a way to make not lose money. If they lose money, they don't have a business. They can't employ their employees. They can't operate, stuff like that. So save the bottom line seems to make sense. And best way to do that when you're not making as much money is to cut costs. So I understand it from the business side. On the player side, like, we don't sign a per game amount. We don't sign a, you know, prorated contract. We sign, like, if I play this year, or once I sign this contract, I'm making X amount this year. So if I get hurt in spring training and I play zero games, I still make that amount. Right or wrong, that's what the contracts are. I can see why the players would be upset about not getting, you know, their amount of money, or at least a prorated amount. Like, you shouldn't make less per game than you would have normally.
See, I mean, so he's already pissed you off if you're an Astros fan. He's given you some insight, and then he's given some really good, I think, very objective perspective of something that's been frustrating for baseball fans for a long time. I'm kind of getting a little bit of respect for Houston's most hated right now.
Hey, man, he deals in reason. He deals in logic. He was very logical and very reasonable with his assessment of how the negotiations went the way they went, and why the owners had their stance and why the players had their stance. And that's why there was static, because those two stances didn't jive. They didn't mesh. And so there was back and forth because of that. And the rest is history. Now we got baseball coming up in 16 days for the Houston Astros. But Bauer also was one of those dudes that has been talking about Major League Baseball and how they need to promote their players more and they work on marketing better. He's got a lot of really good ideas of how the game can be improved and changed. And so, to me, even though he's lame for always picking on the Astros, I mean, somewhat lame, He does make a lot of sense with the stuff that he says when it comes to trying to grow the game, because the baseball is sitting in third place when it comes to professional sports, and they shouldn't be there. At one point, they were number one. You know, when I was growing up, baseball was definitely more popular than basketball until really Jordan just really took over the game. Like, in, it was towards like the late 80s, you saw a switch between baseball becoming the third favorite sport in professional sports here in America, and it's stuck there, and it's not getting any better. Like, their numbers continue to go down, and they have to figure out ways to take advantage of social media and take advantage of marketing their players and just take advantage of what goes on in 2020 in order to push and grow your brand. And right now, they're not doing that.
Now, Houston's Most Hated has already pissed you off. He's given you some insight. I promise he's going to piss you off very shortly. But here's him talking about what you just said. And while he understands both perspectives, he does think that the problems with baseball might be magnified, not because the players and owners didn't have their heads in the right place as far as what they wanted, but because it's something else. Here's more from Bauer on Pardon My Take.
Where everyone messed up is that the first thing that the owners did was make it a public fight. I don't know any other business that would intentionally pit their customer base, which is the fans, against their product, which is the players on the field. Enough from a negotiating standpoint and pressuring and trying to get the best deal and all that. It makes sense in a way. The problem is it's very short-sighted. It's about getting the best deal this year and doing irreparable damage to the sport. There's going to be a lot of people that just won't watch baseball for the next X amount of years because they're so mad at the sport. You know, upwards of 40 million Americans are unemployed. All this serious stuff, like we talked about earlier, is going on. And then you have millionaires and billionaires fighting in the public about who's going to get more money or less money or whatever. It's from the very jump, it just got put in the public sphere, which is the wrong thing to do.
Some more good insight from Trevor Bauer, but that's enough insight. Are you ready to get pissed off at him once again?
Why not?
Because Trevor Bauer accused, indirectly, I think he accused Alex Bregman of cheating or breaking some rules this offseason, because Trevor Bauer has gotten in a back and forth with agent Scott Boras.
Yeah.
The agent of Jose Altuve, the agent of most of the prominent baseball players who owners in baseball despise. And Trevor Bauer's kind of called out Scott Boras on Twitter. They've gone back and forth between some of his clients. And Bauer was asked straight up. And keep in mind that Alex Bregman switched agents during this standoff. It was kind of weird that a guy who signed a hefty contract switched agents within the last couple months. Trevor Bauer was asked about going back and forth with Scott Boras and whether or not that was a Boras breaking rules because he's not a Boras client. Agents aren't supposed to talk to other clients. Here's what Trevor Bauer had to say, and I think he kind of hints that the baseball messiah might have broken some rules this offseason.
Oh, well, I mean, he's broken that rule plenty. He's been he's been recruiting all sorts of clients and lying to them and paying them, supposedly. This is all supposedly. Making all sorts of ridiculous claims about, you know, all the agencies are going to fail with COVID and I'm going to be the only one left. It doesn't matter which agency you're actually with. I run the union anyway, so you're going to have to deal with me. Rumors about, you know, paying players to, which is illegal. I think there's potentially some lawsuits coming. I don't know.
He ain't holding back there.
Why is he snitching like that? He's just really telling on everybody. He's telling their business, huh?
That's what he does.
I mean, these things are all allegedly, though. I mean, he doesn't have any hard proof. He's just, you know, allegedly, you know, these things
well,
happen.
Bregman did switch there. You know, there I is mean, that.
Well, listen, the proof's in the pudding. You can make all the allegations you want to give and want to make, but if you're a Boras client, you're going to get paid top dollar. That is what the running understanding is for teams, players, everybody involved, agents. If Boras has somebody, they're not going to play until they get top dollar. And so if a guy sees that and sees all this evidence of all these different players getting paid top dollar, then they're going to go want to get paid top dollar as well. And I don't think Boras just takes any client either. He's going to take clients that's going to allow him to keep having that reputation that I'm going to get top dollar for my guys. So Tyler Bauer could be absolutely correct, but it's going to be very difficult to prove.
Very difficult. Alex Bregman, it's okay. You can go get that money as long as you're hitting baseballs in about 2 weeks. Let's get well-spoken. He's lost about 3 pounds since we talked to him last time. Last time we talked to him, he was getting a haircut. Unofficial weight of what was on his head, 3 pounds. Stanford, how's that head feeling now? Stanford Rout joining us.
Man, guys, what's going on? The head is feeling great. Finally feeling back to my old self because I'm starting to step back out into society.
There we go.
God willing.
Hey, man, I'm going to need y'all to do me a favor. First of all, Landry, I'm going to need you not to ask that grown man how that head was and then how that head is doing. But I don't need you to respond saying that head was great. My head is feeling great. I'm going to need that to cease and desist right here and now.
I'm going
to
save that one.
Yeah, you got it. Please save that one for a later day.
I'm just trying to check out my man's haircut, and now I'm going to have a drop that's going to live the rest.
You earned that, man. That was beautiful. And terrible all at the same time.
Stanford's got a sausage drop, though, so he knows what it's like to be figgied, as they say.
Love sausage. Oh, my goodness.
There you go. Stan, talking about the Texans and that deal, what did you think about that Pat Mahomes contract, $500 million? Because we've had people come on, Mike Florio, John McClain, we had Joel Corey earlier today. We'll hear that at 120. Come on and say, man, like, yeah, that's a lot of money, but he's leaving a lot of meat on the bone, and he could have earned more money than he actually did. What's your reaction to the deal that Pat Mahomes agreed to?
Man, I think they were spot on. I think that obviously when you look at the highlight, when you look at the massive number of half a billy, that's when everybody's like, oh, my God, he's resetting the market, things like that. But when you look at the true numbers, when you look at the fine print, you see a lot of it is not really. So Pat Mahomes definitely left a lot on the table. But I do remember talking to certain people in certain interviews several months back and hearing rumblings of, do you think Pat Mahomes should take less money to go ahead and help out the Chiefs? That way they can go ahead and continue to put a winning product out on the field and actually the opportunity to win multiple Super Bowls, not just the one. And I'm starting to come around to the fact that, yeah, I believe the Chiefs got over on Pat Mahomes in this deal. I do. But I'm starting to come around to the belief that it's not that Pat Mahomes didn't know that. Pat Mahomes was okay with that, and Pat Mahomes, he's well-versed in knowing that he left a lot of meat on the table, but that may have been what he was planning to do all along.
Stan, you're a player, and not to cut you off, but I think I know where you're going with this. Smitty brought this up with Joel Corey, a former agent. It's the Tom Brady philosophy where Pat Mahomes, because people are complaining about the cash flow, but Pat Mahomes knows that he has a Super Bowl window right now, so he's just leaving that open. And it's basically the same thing that Tom Brady did, right? Like that's basically the dilemma you go through. Maximize your cash flow or still get rich and win those rings that everybody craves when they play football.
Yeah, I think that maybe that was a little bit of the Tom Brady blueprint that he's trying to find. And where I come out on that is there still is a little bit of vanity in all of this. There's still a little bit of that disingenuous because why the hell is it 10 years? Why the hell does it run all the way to 2031? So there still is a little bit of, hey, look at me. I want to reset the market. I want to go ahead and have the big headline. Because with all that being said, Pat Mahomes and his agent, they still could have simply just signed a 3-year, not for a 3-year deal for, let's say, $120 million, $40 million a year, something like that. So you're still resetting the market. You're still getting that nice that per year salary that starts with a 4, and you could still structure it in a certain way where you can still be able to have the certain players around you that you need. So I think there still is a little bit of that vanity within all of that.
So that's the thing about that, though, Stanford, when you mentioned that he still have those players around him, that's where I disagree, because I don't think there's any way that you would have Chris Jones back on the roster if he would have done a short-term deal like you're describing and he would have got $120 million over a 3-year period. Guys like Chris Jones would not be there because they wouldn't be able to sign him. The way he did this contract, the way he structured the contract where there's not a lot of cash flow early in the contract, he's going to have it to where the next 4 seasons, this season and three seasons further, they're going to have the flexibility to continue to surround him with guys that are going to help him win Super Bowls. I just look at Pat Mahomes as one of those guys that's special. When I say special, he has the talent and ability that you're never going to have to worry about. Is he going to fall off? And so is he going to not get all of this money in the future that we expect him to get, or that he should be pulling out because he's Pat Mahomes? But what he did do was guarantee himself a chance, the best possible chance, to win multiple Super Bowls in the mention in that category as a Tom Brady, like as being the GOAT. And I've never seen, and correct me if I'm wrong, Stanford, I've never seen the starting quarterback for the Super Bowl champion being the highest paid quarterback that year. It just doesn't work that way, because it takes a team to win a Super Bowl. The quarterback can be the hugest determining factor of how good the overall squad is. So you can go get that bread, and I can respect you if you want to get that bread because you're taking care of your family for generations to come. But if you want to get rings and you're a franchise quarterback, you got to be flexible and not hurt the team so that you can be surrounded with guys that will help you get that trophy.
Well, Smitty, first off, I think that what you just said as far as the quarterback winning the Super Bowl, was there ever a year where he was the highest paid quarterback in the league? I'm not sure, and I probably would go ahead and side with you. I don't think there has been in history where a quarterback has won the Super Bowl and he was the highest paid that year. That's number one. Number two, my question would be, when you say about simply knowing that, okay, we know that this guy is not going to fall off, we know he's going to maintain the level of talent, the level of practice, preparation, things like that, are you talking about that you feel that confidence from the team standpoint or a player standpoint?
I'm talking about Pat Mahomes himself. He knows that he's that good. And so he's not, because you got to think about it. When we look at these contracts, a lot of times you want to protect yourself from injury. If you're a player and you're signing your deal, you want to make sure that you cover yourself if you have an injury. But at the same time, you want to cover yourself if things around you go awry. You want to make it to where you can protect yourself so they won't just leave you and cut you off and let you go. If you're somebody that's not as confident in your abilities, you want to get as much money as you can, because I might get hurt. I might not be able to play at the level that I've been playing at. He's so early in his career that he knows he's going to be good for the next 8 years. His arm is not going to start bothering him for another 10 years. He's not going to lose a step running for another 7 or 8 years. So all these dollars that are out there in front of him in year 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of this deal, he's going to be the caliber player that is going to continue to warrant that money. So he doesn't have to worry about missing out on potential dollars there.
Okay, so I'll ask all three of you, Smitty, Landry, Figgy, I'll ask all three of you this question. Would you guys, yourself, or let's say your son, sign that contract, 10 years, 450, 477, 503? I've seen so many different versions. It's a whole lot of money. We all know that. Would you sign that deal, or would you give your blessing for your son to sign a deal of everything you just said, Smitty, and only $63 million of that is guaranteed, fully guaranteed?
As long as he's the quarterback, yeah. As long as he's the quarterback, yes. Every other position in the NFL, I would say hell no, because the quarterback is the most protected position in football. They're protected by teammates. They're protected by the rules. They're protected by everything involved. They're the face of the league. So if you sign that contract, think about how much money Pat Mahomes is going to make in endorsements because he signed that
deal. A whole lot.
He's going to make millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars just in endorsements because he was the guy that signed the richest deal in the history of sports. So if my son is the quarterback, yeah, you go ahead and sign that, because I know you're going to get your bread. Every other position, I'd be like, hell no, get what you can while you can, because they'll get rid of you as soon as they can.
Landry.
What up? What up?
Got to answer the question.
Sure, man.
Oh, my God.
I can't relate to these millions, so sure. I'll
oh, my
man.
God.
Give me $5 million up front.
Landry.
Give me $5 million up front.
Landry, like, you sounded like you had no idea of what I was throwing at you.
No, I know what you're throwing at me. I mean, I would take the Mahomes deal. I think Mahomes is going to be okay. And I don't – look, man, like, this is the problem that we have when we talk about this. And I was talking about this with Smitty, Stan. And I know it's a business, but we talk about the Patriots and we talk about the Tom Brady formula. I think there's going to be some good faith with the Kansas City Chiefs. I think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to look out for Pat Mahomes. And I think that if 5 years from now or whatever, they feel like he's underpaid, I feel like that they will rip up the contract and make his deal proportional. And I also feel if he gets hurt or something, they're still going to pay him. So maybe I'm foolish. I know players have been burned for trusting organizations. But I think if I'm Pat Mahomes, with what I mean to the Chiefs, with what the Chiefs mean to me, with the understanding that this is a win-win for both sides, I would have faith if I were Pat Mahomes to sign that deal. Now, if you tell me it's the New England Patriots, probably not. But with the Chiefs, yes, I think in this situation I would have done what Mahomes did because I could see them looking out for him on the back end.
Figgy.
I agree, man. I agree. I feel like they got a chance to win a couple Super Bowls like this, so I agree. But if my son asked me, I would have said, hey, get as much money as you can.
Now, before I go any further, let me just go ahead and say, hey, man, listen, 10 years, 450, 477, 503, whatever that top number is, hey, like, that's a hell of a lot of money. I wish I had the opportunity to sign a contract like that. Believe me on that. So much respect to Pat Mahomes. Like, that's literally setting a new market, setting a new precedent. I believe the first time ever where a football player, American football player, is got the richest complete total value salary in all of sports. But like I said, because of the question you guys asked me, the $63 million fully guaranteed, that number is in there for a reason. And with the Chiefs, what you said, Landry, about there being some good faith and them not trying to screw him over and them actually going to do right by him, them having that number at 63 and not 163, not 125, hell, not 200, that perplexes me. And I maybe I'm just being a stickler for numbers here, but the fact that that number is 63 and it not at least be triple digits, that puzzles me. And that makes me always wonder, is Kansas City giving themselves an escape hatch? Now, Pat Mahomes is what, 24 years old? He ain't losing no arm talent no time soon. He ain't losing none of that gunslinger no time soon. We all know that. So let's just go ahead and put that out there. But the simple fact that Kansas City wants to make sure that they have that fully guaranteed lower number in there makes me wonder, is there a certain level of skepticism or just sinister? I want to be able to go ahead and kind of dip out the back door if I ever need to. That just always that'll always give me cause to pause a little bit whenever I think about this deal.
Stanford Brout with us for Well Spoken Wednesday. Stan, we appreciate the time. You want me to make you smarter before you leave?
Hey, always, man.
All right, so
go ahead.
So you asked earlier in the segment if there's been a time when the highest paid quarterback has won a Super Bowl. Twice. I looked up twice in the last 25 years. There could be more, but I have two specific examples. 1995, Dallas Cowboys, Troy Aikman was the highest paid quarterback in the league. And this is where it gets interesting. 2001, the New England Patriots. Drew Bledsoe was on the team. He was the highest paid quarterback in the league.
Nobody's talking about
okay.
that.
And they let his ass go, too.
Okay, that makes sense, because that's why when I went to you, Landry, you sounded completely disheveled when I asked your opinion, because you were looking that up just now, weren't you?
Oh, don't make assumptions, man. Maybe it was just a dumb question, Stanford. Maybe it was just a dumb question. All right, man, we appreciate you, brother.
All right, man, you guys be good, man. I'll talk to y'all next week.
So, man, Stanford Rout, Well Spoken Wednesday. Let's go around the NFL. Would Deshaun Watson turn down the Mahomes deal? An NFL insider says yes. That's next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.